I now can sing since I've been redeemed.
I'm on the everlasting, everlasting rock.
I faith in Christ, my Redeemer King.
I'm on the everlasting, everlasting rock. Then roll, roll, billows roll. I'm on the everlasting rock of ages. Roll, roll, billows roll. I'm on the everlasting rock.
Welcome to the Voice of Hope. Thank you for joining us for a time of Bible teaching and discovery. I trust that as we spend this time together, we will grow in our walk with Jesus.
I sing the mighty power of God that made the mountains rise, that spread the flowing seas abroad and built the lofty skies. I sing the wisdom that ordained the sun to rule the day. The moon shines full at his command and all the stars obey.
I'm Anthony High, Executive Director of Heralds of Hope. If you're a regular listener, you know that we've been working through a series on the short but very powerful Old Testament book of Ruth. Before we get into today's study, I want to share this wonderful testimony from a listener of our Nepali program. Nepali is just one of the 30 languages our programs are translated into, reaching people across this landlocked country through an FM radio network. Here's what this listener shared. Along with other TWR broadcasts, I adore the Heralds of Hope program. My family and I set aside time to hear the word, for the Lord has given us incredible blessings. In such a tender, fatherly, and loving manner, God has completely changed my life and my heart. Because of his love for me, I am a very different person than I was 5 years ago. Now, I long to spend eternity with him, obey him, and please him. He sacrificed his life for me and countless others, and he longs to deliver us from the depths of hell and eternal separation from him. Amen to that. Over the next several weeks, Arlen Horst and I we'll be studying and discussing this fascinating story from Ruth. And for those of you who have been wondering about our regular Bible teacher, J. Mark Horst, don't worry. He'll be back in a few weeks to wrap up his series on the Gospel of Mark. So grab your Bible and let's get started.
Today, in our study through Ruth, we're going to be looking at the end of chapter 2. And the key word here is a kinsman's redeemer. When I heard that, I was like, a what redeemer? And so that's the title of our lesson today. A what redeemer? Join us now as we look at Ruth chapter 2, verses 17 to 23. To introduce this lesson, I'd like us to think about the term redemptive analogy. This is a term that was made popular by Don Richardson many years ago, and people are usually familiar with it because they read the book Peace Child. And in that book, he uses the illustration from the Sawi people of how when there was two tribes at war, the one tribe would give a son to the other tribe. Mm-hmm. And as long as that child was alive, there was no fighting, no war. And that child was the peace child. And when Christians came to that area, they heard about that tradition, and they realized that's the perfect way to teach Jesus. And it clicks. And so that's a redemptive analogy. This culture was doing this thing that they didn't realize was pointing to who Jesus is. And there's other examples of that. Do you know of any?
Yeah, so I was just thinking of one here. The Wayani tribe in northern South America, they have a tradition. They would abandon or neglect their children a lot. So if the father did not want the child, they would let the child lay, and it would die of neglect. Mm. It's good. It's a terrible story. But if the father did want the child, he would pick them up. Mm-hmm. And when the missionaries came, they realized that analogy. And so their explanation for redemption or salvation was that God picked us up.
Oh, nice.
And picked us up and rescued us when we were helpless.
Right.
So there was also another one. One of them was from northern Africa. And that one there, when the two tribes were warring, they mm-hmm. would bring a goat to the river, and both tribes would come to the riverbank, and mm-hmm. they would kill the goat, slit the throat of the goat, and put it in the water, and the water would be all bloody. And so then both tribes would come in and bathe in the river, and that made them one family. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of the idea that, you know, Christ died for us.
Right. Washed in the blood.
Yeah, it's kind of that idea. They were washed, they were clean, they became one family.
Right. These redemptive analogies are a great way to introduce this lesson of a kinsman's redeemer. Mm-hmm. I want to understand kinsman's redeemer from this perspective because it makes me so amazed about my kinsman's redeemer. And so that's the goal. Let's understand the kinsman's redeemer here in Ruth so that we can be amazed at our kinsman's redeemer.
Meaning Jesus.
Absolutely. So if you could read Ruth 2:17 to the end, and then we'll spend some time talking about it.
All right. Ruth chapter 2, verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law, with whom she had worked, and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. She lived with her mother-in-law.
Thanks for reading that, Tony. We're going to look at what these verses teach about Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, and kind of review some of what we learned. And then I want to spend the rest of the lesson talking about this kinsman's redeemer, because it's new to us, and we got to understand that whole culture. There's a whole mindset that comes with it. But before we do that, notice in verse 19 how Naomi knew this was not normal. It's like, where were you? How'd you get so much? Yeah. She knew what was normal for poor people to get in a day, and Ruth got way more. So that caught her attention. In verse 20, Naomi seems to have a heart switch. At the end of chapter 1, she's at a hard spot, and God has not been good. And now it seems like she's coming through that hard spot. As we looked at earlier, she was honest and open with where she was. Now, in verse 20, it seems like she's coming through that. And I think that's commendable. She didn't stay there, but while she was there, she was honest about it and was real with her emotions. At the end of the section of verses you read today, Boaz encourages her, Ruth, to come back to his field and stay there because she's safe there. And that's just like godly men everywhere. They're always protecting. They're always safe to be around. And Ruth felt that. Naomi encourages her to go there, stay in his fields because you'll be safe. Remember, this also points to the perverted time they were in. She should have been safe everywhere, but it wasn't. And Boaz, as the godly man he was, he stood out.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and read Judges, you can find some of those stories, and especially the way Judges ends.
Right. It's just very, very perverted. Mm-hmm. People are just doing whatever they want, whenever they want. So that's just a little review, looking at a few instances from those verses. Now, let's think about the kinsman's redeemer. This was such a part of their culture. And today I would like to try to enter in and try to understand how it works and try to put ourselves in that country, in that culture, so we can know what Ruth and Naomi were experiencing to a fuller extent. When I drive, I don't think twice about making a left-hand turn on our road system. But then when I go to another country where the roads are reversed, it's confusing. And I think I would crash if I were driving.
When you're making a turn, like a right-hand turn or left-hand turn, and where you do drive on the other side of the road, do you jump?
Oh, when I first go there and it's new, it gets me every time.
Ah, look out!
Yeah, exactly. To enter into their culture, I want to look at some of the laws, just normal laws that they had, and then look more closely at this kinsman's redeemer and how that affected their way of looking at things. The first law I want to think about and look at is the year of Jubilee. Every 50 years, there was this year of Jubilee, and the land would go back to the rightful owner. He would sell it because he was on hard times or couldn't work. 50 years later, it would come back to him or his descendants. And that is not huge, but it's something to remember about this kinsman's redeemer.
It was a great leveler. The rich didn't continue to get richer, and the poor poorer. It kind of brought them back together somewhat.
Right.
Maybe not the whole way, but at least part way.
That's one law that helps us understand their culture. The second one is some of their inheritance laws. If you look in Numbers 27 and read it like a law book, this is how the children of Israel conducted themselves. In Ruth, if Naomi would have died, her land would have went to the nearest male relative, as I understand it. Obviously, she didn't have a husband or a son. So then it would go back to Elimelech and his brothers and their sons, if that was the closest relative. I imagine that's what it was. We don't know for sure. But that was the law. That's how it worked. And so she knew this and was considering this when she was thinking about her future. The other one that is worthwhile thinking about is this whole thing of a kinsman's redeemer. And we want to understand the kinsman's redeemer so we understand our kinsman's redeemer. There's a whole world of understanding that goes with those two words. In English, it doesn't quite sum it up with just kinsman's redeemer. And if you look at the Hebrew word, goel, if I'm saying it right, it gets translated into 6 or 7 different words throughout the Old Testament. Majority of them are redeemer and kinsman, but there's also a couple times it gets used as revenger or avenger, ransom a few times. All of those words play into what he did. The kinsman's redeemer had several roles that he was expected to redeem or things he was expected to do. And I've summed it up into 3 different distinct roles. If you want to read more about it, it's in Leviticus 25 and Numbers 35. But the first one was property or land. The kinsman redeemer was expected to redeem property. If it was sold and he could redeem it on behalf of his relative, then he could do that. The second one was slavery. If you had if you broke your leg or something and couldn't work and sold yourself to pay off your debt, then you were a slave. And if you didn't have enough money to buy yourself out or stop being a slave, the kinsman's redeemer could redeem you and you were no longer a slave. And then the third one is the kinsman's redeemer was also the blood avenger. And this is taught in Numbers 35, where if someone was killed, it was up to the kinsman's redeemer to avenge their blood. And it's a whole thought process that went with this kinsman's redeemer.
It was a sense of justice or kind of even a police force in some ways.
Right. If it was unintentional, the person who did it could go to the city of refuge. But anytime he left the city of refuge, as I understand it, the blood avenger or the kinsman's redeemer could mete out justice. This is how Naomi would have looked at the world. This was part of who she was. This is how it worked. And this was normal. We don't have that. We don't have that equivalent in our culture. When she said, "This man is our kinsman's redeemer," there was a lot that went into those two words. We're trying to unpack some of that. The other law that is in the Old Testament that we hear about, and sometimes we hear it in reference to Boaz, is this thing of levirate marriage. And as I understand levirate marriage taught in Deuteronomy 25, where it starts out by saying, if brothers dwell together. Obviously, there's different interpretation. Is that talking about brothers, as in this is our country, siblings. We're brothers?
Oh, okay.
Or is it talking about siblings, my brother? I'd lean towards the idea that it's talking about siblings. And if a brother's wife died, it was up to the brother to continue the family lineage. Some people use that to say Boaz was fulfilling his duty in levirate marriage. But I would say that it doesn't quite line up. Boaz wasn't a brother. And in Ruth chapter 3, when the other kinsman's redeemer, the closer one, didn't accept it, he wasn't scorned. It wasn't a shameful thing. It was okay, and Boaz said, I'll take it. If he would have been a brother, or if it would have been this levirate marriage, I think he would have been shamed for refusing his responsibility.
He didn't do what he was supposed to do in that case.
Right.
Okay.
So I don't see Boaz's commitment in chapter 3 as part of this levirate marriage. But that was also in Naomi's understanding. That was how she looked at the world.
Okay.
And I think you see this in chapter 1, where she says to Orpah and Ruth, you know, if I have a son, you're not going to wait till he grows up, referring to this idea of levirate marriage.
Yeah. And that would have also protected them as well. But there was no way that that was going to happen.
Not in this situation.
In this situation.
Right. So there was four laws that we looked at. Each of them, I think, play a role in Ruth and Naomi's understanding of their culture. And it's good for us to try to enter in, to try to understand their culture. This is who they were. This is how they looked at the world. Let's look a little closer at this idea of a kinsman's redeemer, this goel. There were four things that had to happen before redemption could happen, before it could be completed. One of them was that he had to be near of kin. He had to be related. And as we find out later in the book of Ruth, Boaz says, there's someone else who is closer. Like the closer the relative, they had the first right. And Boaz was respectful and he was going to give that man first opportunity like the law taught. So he had to be related. The kinsman's redeemer had to be related. The second thing is he had to be able to redeem. He had to have the means. If he was going to buy the property or buy the person out of slavery, he had to have the funds to do it, the resources to make it happen. And then the third thing, he had to be willing. In chapter 3, we see a redeemer that had the means, but when he learned to hold all the details, he wasn't willing. So he had to have the means, he had to be willing, and then lastly, the fourth thing, he had to pay the price. It was more than just a nice idea. There was actual sacrifice involved. He had to pay the cost. And we know Boaz did all of those. He was near of kin, he was able, he was willing, and he paid the price to redeem Naomi's land, to redeem Ruth. He was the kinsman's redeemer that followed through in every aspect.
So take me into Jesus here. How does Jesus become our kinsman redeemer? Like, how do you connect those two things?
That's a good question. And that's the best part of the lesson.
Okay.
This is where I see the redemptive analogy coming through. You know, God put this system in place years, thousands of years, hundreds of years before Jesus came. And he's pointing to Jesus, I think. Mm-hmm. Look at the four things that a kinsman's had to be, which we just talked about. He had to be near of kin. Well, Jesus took on flesh. He became a human. He had to be able, and Jesus was perfect. He was able to redeem.
And that's because he was free from sin?
Right.
Okay.
And then he had to be willing. And we know Jesus was willing to die on the cross. He went through with God's plan. And then the last one, he had to pay the price, which, you know, his sacrifice on the cross was him paying the price. And so he followed through with the four things that were necessary for a kinsman's redeemer, which is just a piece of it. Now think back to what a kinsman's redeemer could redeem. It was property, slavery, and the blood avenger. Here again, we have those three things pointing to exactly what Jesus did for us on the cross. In the Garden of Eden, we lost our right to the land. Adam sinned, Satan took the right. Jesus redeemed it. He bought it back. It's all his. The dominion is his. It's not completed yet, but it will be. The curse will be totally reversed. So that's one aspect of it. The second thing is with slavery. So we were slaves to sin, and Jesus redeemed us from slavery.
Right.
And then the third one, the blood avenger. This reminded me of the first prophecy we see about Jesus in Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 3, we see Jesus will crush the head of Satan, and Satan will bruise his heel. Like, vengeance is coming. And we see Jesus fulfilling that on the cross, where he defeated Satan. Mm-hmm. And yet, I believe there's so much more coming. A vengeance is coming on Satan totally and completely.
Will completely wipe away that sin and not only start over fresh, but will also take revenge on it or take vengeance on it.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So all three aspects there and the four things that the kinsman's redeemer had to do all point to our kinsman's redeemer, Jesus. That's the neat part about this. That's the exciting thing about this lesson. God gave this many years ago, pointing to Jesus and saying, you know, this is him. This is my son. He's the redeemer. Look to him. Be saved. If you don't know this kinsman's redeemer, now's a great time to get to know him. And if you do know him, be encouraged. Like, he is our kinsman's redeemer. And that's exciting. We have lots to look forward to. It's amazing.
Yeah, what stands out to me in this is they realize that there is a redeemer and he's available or he's there. They didn't continue gleaning in whatever field they could find and risking their lives in it. Like, she could have just avoided him and kept on going, but actually went to him for refuge. And I think that maybe points to salvation as well. Like, Jesus is there. He's available. We can come to him. Mm-hmm. He calls us. But you can avoid him as well.
We'll look at this the next lesson. But it's like Naomi encourages Ruth to take the next step. We're not always sure what to do with Ruth chapter 3 because it's real awkward in our situation. As I understand it, it wasn't. It was normal for that culture. And Naomi encourages Ruth to take the next step. And yeah, we'll look more at that next week.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Thank you for joining us as we studied the kinsman redeemer in the story of Ruth. As Arlen stated at the beginning of the program, Naomi and Ruth didn't need the role of kinsman redeemer explained to them. It was just part of their culture. By unpacking the concept and connecting it to Jesus as our kinsman redeemer, I hope you have received a clearer picture of Jesus as our Savior. I hope you enjoyed today's episode here on The Voice of Hope. If you'd like to watch more Bible-based content, you can find us on YouTube by searching Guide Through the Bible. You can also visit our website at www.heraldsofhope.org and click on the link on the homepage. If you'd like to listen to this episode again, you'll find it on our website, or you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you find your podcasts. To reach us or to support this ministry, give us a call at 866-960-0292 or send an email to hope@heraldsofhope.org. Or you can write us at The Voice of Hope, 6183 Lincoln Highway, Harrisonville, Pennsylvania, 17228. We'd love to hear from you and let us know where you're listening from. Your prayers are vital and your gifts make this ministry possible. Through God's grace and your faithful prayers, we can work together to win the world for Jesus. Be sure to join us the next time for The Voice of Hope.
Three crosses, one stood on a lonely hill where three were crucified. There was one without name on the middle cross and a thief on either side. Oh, the man on the middle cross was my Lord, dying to save me from loss. Sinless and blameless I see.
In anguish and shame.